The minute that I died, I opened up my eyes and I was standing in the most beautiful building I had ever seen. It was this long, long corridor building, and everything around me was beautiful white marble. And my first thought was, oh my gosh, I had no idea the hospital was this big, because I didn't know that I had died.
John Davis, finally I've got you on the show, and I'm so excited to hear your story today. You had such an incredible near-death experience. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Louisa. It's great to see you. Thank you for having me on. I so appreciate it. So thank you so much.
Oh, it's my honor. It's your show today. I'll probably ask you questions afterwards, but I'm just going to hand it
Sure.
over to you, the most
Okay.
detailed, incredible near-death experience I've heard in a long time.
Wonderful, wonderful. I love sharing it. So feel free to interrupt me if you have any questions.
Okay.
And I'll just start from the beginning.
Okay.
My experience started when I was 21. And all these years later, I like to tell people that I didn't, you know how a lot of people will come back and they say that they had a gift after they had their near-death experience? Well, I didn't really have anything like that. I didn't come back with the ability to talk to the other side or have any kind of psychic ability. But I think what God gave me was the ability to remember, because normally I have a really bad memory. Like, I can't remember what I had for dinner last night. But when I had my near-death experience, even though it was all these years ago, back in 1987, I remember it just like it happened yesterday. And I think that was something that they gave me so that I could share my experience with anybody who would listen. Because I think they gave me what they gave me, not for me, but so that I could share it. So that's what I've been doing all these years. And I am able to share it with so much detail because I remember it so specifically. I remember what everybody told me. I remember what I saw. I remember what I experienced. And so when I share it, it feels like it just happened. And I think that's something that God gave me. So I'll give you a little bit of background. My experience was a little bit different than what you hear a typical near-death experience person has. A lot of times, what happens is the person is in some kind of an accident, or they're having surgery and they die, and they find themselves floating above their body, looking down, and they can see everything that's going on. Then they become aware of a tunnel, and they start moving down this tunnel. And at the end of the tunnel, there's a white light. Well, as they start moving down the tunnel, they're met by somebody like a family member, a parent, a grandparent, a sibling, a friend, and they tell them it's not their time. They have to go back. So we have never known what happens when someone goes into the light. But what they did with me, somehow, and I don't understand how they did it, but they bypassed all of that. And my experience starts on the other side of the white light. So that's where I begin. Well, how this all started was my dad was in sales and he won a sales contest. And part of what he won were these two mopeds or two scooters. And we used to ride these things all over the neighborhood every weekend. Well, one weekend I had an accident and I slammed into a tree. And I tore the tendons off my right hand, and I had to go in to have them reattached. Well, I was only 21, and I had never really spent much time in a hospital, and I had never had surgery before, so I had no idea what to expect. So I go in the day of the surgery, and they start to give me the anesthesia, and I had an allergic reaction to the anesthesia, and it stopped my heart, and I died. And I was actually clinically dead for 7 minutes. So all of the things that I experienced happened in Earth time of 7 minutes. But where I was, it felt like I was experiencing this for an hour or two. So here's how it starts. The minute that I died, I opened up my eyes and I was standing in the most beautiful building I had ever seen. It was this long, long corridor building, and everything around me was beautiful white marble. in the first, my first thought was, oh my gosh, I had no idea the hospital was this big. Because I didn't know that I had died. Through this whole thing that I was shown, I didn't know that I died. I only knew that after I came back. So the building that I was in was beautiful white marble. And to my right were these 20 or 30 foot high marble columns. And they went down all the way down this corridor. And they were about 6 feet apart. In the center where I was standing were these marble tables. And they were square. And there was a bench on each side of these tables. And as far as I could see, there were two people sitting at each one of these tables. Well, right about now, in my left ear, I heard, my name is Alan. I'm your spirit guide. Well, I realized that every one of us has a spirit guide when we come into a lifetime. And their job is to help us plan our lives, what we want to accomplish, what we want to learn, what we want to grow from. And they're with us our whole lives. So as this whole thing unfolded for me, my guide, Alan, was telling me what I was seeing and where I was. And what he did is every time he took me someplace, he took me to the outside of these buildings first so I could see what they looked like. And then he took me to the inside and he told me where I was. I was in the orientation center. What happens when somebody passes and they go into the white light? They end up at the orientation center where I was standing. Well, all these tables went all the way down, and there were these two people sitting at each table. And my guide said, they're orientation counselors. Everybody on the other side seems to have a vocation or something that they love to do. And it's not like here on Earth where you have a job where you go to work to pay bills. On the other side, you just do the things that you love to do. And my guide explained to me that these people are called orientation counselors. And what they do is they help orientate people back from a lifetime back to the other side. Well, the reason that they're there is very few of us remember where we're from. The other side, or heaven, or the afterlife, whatever people like to call it, that's home. That's where we're from. And very few of us remember when we're in a lifetime where we're from. So the orientation counselors help these people reorientate back to the other side. Well, right about then, off to my left, next to each one of these tables, were these absolutely gorgeous tunnels. And they looked like they'd been cut out of the marble. And they went, again, far down as you could see. There was a tunnel, then a table, then a column. And these tunnels, when I looked at them, it was like looking into space. You couldn't see anything. It was just absolutely black. But it was beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And my guide said these tunnels are what connect people from their Earth life to the other side. And he told me to look at the next tunnel. Well, as I looked up to the next tunnel, there was a man coming through. He was an elderly gentleman. He was probably in his 80s or 90s, and he had his right hand over his chest, like he had pain. And my guide told me that he died from a heart attack, and he was coming through the tunnel into the orientation center. Well, the woman, this orientation counselor, the one that was closest to him, she stood up, she walked over, and she took his hands in hers. And she led him back to the table and they sat down. She was sitting across from him. The whole time she was holding his hands. Well, I was too far away. I could not hear what she was saying. But my guide was telling me that she was basically orientating him back to the other side, saying that you just came back from a lifetime, you finished your life, and now you're back on the other side. And my guide said to watch him. So I started watching him, and Louisa, all of a sudden, he began to change. He changed from an elderly gentleman into a man in his late 20s or early 30s. And my guide told me that everybody on the other side is in their early 30s. but I don't know why that is. I didn't think to ask him, why is that? Was it something to do with Jesus's lifetime when he died at 33? Or I don't know. I didn't think to ask. But everybody is young on the other side. Well, as this woman finished talking to him, he had changed back to his normal appearance, what he was like before he came into earth. And he remembered everything about the other side, remembered everything about where he was from. Well, when she was done talking to him, he stood up and he walked off to the right and he walked down these three marble steps between the columns into what I call the gardens. I don't know if that's what they call them over there, but they looked like an English manicured garden. Absolutely breathtakingly beautiful. I remember the grass was so green. I've never seen grass look like that. It was emerald green. And the flowers and the trees and the plants that they had in these gardens were absolutely gorgeous. Well, it turns out that when you have your orientation and you finish talking to the orientation counselor, you walk into these gardens, and that's where what you have, it's called the reunion. And all of these people that this man had known in his lifetime, friends, family, acquaintances, you know, whatever, were all there waiting for him. And they were clapping and applauding, hugging him, telling him he did a good job. And my guide told me that the reason that we have these reunions is it's a really big deal to have a lifetime on earth because it's so hard here. This is the hardest place of all the other planets that we can have lifetimes on. And there are many, many souls who don't want to come here because it is so hard. So when you finish a lifetime here on earth, it's a big deal. And that's why all these people are there to greet you. So I learned that everybody that you lost in your lifetime, nobody's really gone. They're just in a different place. And they're all going to be there when your time comes, when you finish your lifetime and you go back. And the one thing I want to tell your listeners that they can do a Google search for this. There's a temple in Turkey, in the country of Turkey, and it's called the Temple of Artemis. It's Artemis. And I mention it because it looked very much like the orientation building, this beautiful Greek building with columns. And I don't know why so many of the things that my guide took me to look, they were made of marble. I don't know why. But the places that he took me to, it was almost like being on a college campus. You know how a lot of college campuses will have their, you've got your science building here, you've got your history building, you've got your English building. That's kind of what it felt like where he took me to. He only took me to a small area of the other side. So what I saw wasn't everything in totality. It was just a small part. But whatever he took me to, a lot of the buildings looked like they were made of the Greek marble, the Greek kind of design. Well, this is what started the whole, after this, he took me to all these different places. And the first place he took me to was another beautiful Greek Roman looking building. It was a big rectangle and it had columns all along the sides and in the front. And I cannot express to you how large these buildings were, but we have nothing like them here on earth, just absolutely gigantic. So he takes me to the outside. I see what it looks like. And then he takes me to the inside. And he took me into one of the rooms there. And I was in a room that was, it was round, this large round building or room. And it looked like a theater, like a traditional theater that we have here. But instead of having the screen in the front, the movie screens were all on the top in a big circle. There must have been maybe 15 or 20 of these screens. And my guide said, everybody has a life review. And as soon as he said that, all of a sudden, each one of these screens lit up. And it looked like there was a movie playing. Well, as I looked closer, I realized that every one of these screens had a different period of my lifetime. One was of me as a little toddler. Another screen showed me as a little adolescent. Another screen showed me the first day of kindergarten. And every screen was playing a different aspect of my life up to the age that I was at 21. And my guide said, everybody has to go through a life review. Well, the reason for that is that you want to see how you did. Did you accomplish everything you set out to accomplish? And here's the wonderful thing about this part of my experience. I was raised Catholic, and I had a lot of worries and fears about judgment. Does someone judge you? Does God judge your lifetime? And well, I found out that nobody judges your life. You're the only judge of your life. The only people that go with you in your life review is your spirit guide, because they're the ones that helped you plan your life. So that was just an amazing thing to realize, that your lifetime isn't judged. You're the only one that judges it. And the thing that's so unique about the life review is, as you're watching these different screens playing, you can feel what you felt like at that time period. So if you help somebody, there was a part in one of these screens that I had totally forgotten about. And God and the other side know that what's really important about your lifetime is how you treat others. Do you live a life of kindness, of compassion, of helping? Well, one of the things that they showed in my life review was of me in elementary school. And there was a young boy in our class. His name was Troy. And he was born with developmental disabilities, and he had to walk with, I guess, kind of like crutches. And he fell in the playground. And we ran over, a friend of mine, we ran over and helped pick him up. Well, that was something that I never gave two thoughts about. It was just something that you did to help somebody else. Well, in my life review, that was a big deal, because I unselfishly went over to help somebody. At the same time, the life review also showed you if your behavior had any impact on somebody else. Did you hurt somebody? Did you maliciously try to malign somebody, or you purposely try to intentionally hurt someone? In the life review, all of us feel what our actions made someone else feel. And it's one of the greatest learning experiences when you get back to the other side, because everything is about learning. And that's why we come in. And a lot of people have asked me, you know, the other side is an absolute perfect environment. There's no war, there's no disease, there's no poverty, there's no hunger, there's nothing negative. It's perfect over there. And people say, well, why then, why do we choose to come into a lifetime and experience all the stuff that goes on here? Well, the answer is that we all come here to learn and to experience and to grow. And not all of us choose to come here. It's totally up to the person if they want to come into a lifetime here or not. Nobody forces us to. But the reason that we come here is because the best way that we learn is to go through something challenging, something hard. You go through a relationship breakup. You go through the loss of a job. You go through the loss of a loved one. All of these things teach us by experience. And on the other side, there is no death. There is no loss of a job. There's no suffering. And you can still learn on the other side. But it's like trying to tell somebody what it's like to ride a bicycle for the first time. You can tell somebody, but they'll never really experience that until they do it for themselves. So that's why we come here, is to learn and to grow. Well, that building, that was called the Life Review Building. The next building he took me to, again, was another large, big building with columns all along the front and the sides. And he took me to the inside. And one of the rooms he took me to looked just like a theater like we have today. And the screen, there was a movie screen in front. And my guide said, I'm going to show you past lifetimes. Well, this was something I had a hard time with because being a Catholic, you know, being raised in the church and reading the Bible, there is no talk of past lifetimes. But the truth is, we are eternal. We exist forever. We never die. And we can have many, many lifetimes, as many as we want. It's totally up to us. So he said, I want to show you some different lifetimes. And all of a sudden, the screen turned on. And the first life he showed me was I was a monk. I had a shaved head. I was wearing a red gown or a tunic. And I was teaching kids. And in that lifetime, my job was to teach kids about life in a monastery. And what was so interesting is I knew by looking at this where that lifetime occurred. And it was somewhere in Southeast Asia. And then it went off. Then he showed me another life. The screen came on again. And this time I was a shoe peddler. And I had a little wheelbarrow. And I had a bunch of shoes in it. And my job in that lifetime was I fixed people's shoes. I would go to their homes in the village, get the shoes they wanted me to fix, take them back to my shop, fix them, and then bring them back to the people. That was my job. And that life took place somewhere in Eastern Europe. Then that life disappeared. Then another one showed up, and this was of a fisherman. I was a fisherman in a little wooden raggedy kind of boat on a lake, and I had nets, and I was tossing these nets into the water. And part of my job in that life was to help feed the community from catching fish. And that lifetime happened somewhere in the Middle East. And that's when I realized that, wow, we really do have past lifetimes. We can have as many lifetimes as we want or as few as we want. It's totally up to us. So that was the building where we go to view past lifetimes. The next one he took me to, and this was probably one of the most beautiful buildings that he showed me. This was a round building, absolutely beautiful, huge, absolutely gigantic building. And there were columns all along the circle, I guess the circumference of this building. And there was a big dome on it. And I don't know why, but we go to this building every time we want to plan a new lifetime. And it seems to be that's just where you go when you go there with your guide and you plan a lifetime. So we go on the inside and he takes me to a marble table. And on this table, there's a scroll. You know what? Have you ever seen like Egyptian papyrus?
Yes, yes.
It looked kind of like that, but it was folded up, rolled up with a blue ribbon around it. And my guide wanted me to know that every single one of us plans our lifetimes. None of our lives are accidents. We all have a reason for coming here. And on these scrolls, we actually write down what we want to accomplish in that lifetime. And it made me realize that it was kind of like what a lot of people do at the end of the year, and we have New Year's resolutions. That's kind of what it was like. And you plan things like, what country are you going to live in? Who are your parents going to be? What language are you going to learn? Are you going to have siblings? Are you going to go to the university? What's your career going to be? All these things go into a lifetime. Well, right about then, I took the ribbon off and I unscrolled the scroll. I unfolded it on the table and I could see there was so much writing, and the writing looked like it was done in calligraphy. Remember when you were a kid that you had those ink pens and you had the ink wells and they were trying to teach you how to write calligraphy?
Yes.
That's what it looked like. Well, I tried to read the calligraphy. I tried to read what was on this scroll, and it folded up and they wouldn't let me read what I had written. And the reason was because they didn't want me to nullify any of the experiences I had planned for myself in this lifetime. My guide just wanted me to tell people that your life isn't an accident. you really do plan things based on what you want to learn and grow from. Well, right about then, I looked over to my right, and there was this huge, sprawling wall. It must have been, it could have easily been miles long. And what was in this wall were scrolls. Every single person that was in the lifetime at that point had a scroll, and they were all on these walls. So whenever you finish your lifetime, you go back to this area and you look at your scroll. I thought that was just extraordinary. Right about then, I looked over to my left, and there was this huge sprawling window, and I could see outside. And this was the first time, I think, that I saw or was aware of other people. And there was a pathway that people were walking on, and it was really busy, a very busy walkway. And I describe it like, if you go to a city at lunchtime and you see all these people walking back and forth, that's what it looked like. And people have asked me, well, what do we look like over there? Do we have bodies? And we absolutely do. They look just like we do. But the bodies over there are better. They don't get sick. They don't get injured. They don't have any problems. They're perfect bodies. And on the other side of this walkway, I saw something that was the most beautiful thing I think I've ever seen in my life. It was a lake. The other side is full of nature. There are mountains. You can go hiking. There are oceans and lakes and rivers. Anything that is beautiful here on Earth is on the other side, and it's even more beautiful there. Well, this lake, it was a big circle lake, and it looked like glass along the surface. And the water was so clear that I could see the bottom. And all around were these, have you ever seen weeping willow trees?
Yes, I do. I have one in my garden.
Oh, you do? Okay, fantastic. They're the kind of trees that have their branches flow over.
Yes.
And all of these trees had their branches floating with the leaves in the water. It was absolutely beautiful. So I could see all these people walking by. I could see this gorgeous lake. And then my guide took me to another area of this building. And it was a huge library. That's all I can describe it. But all the books looked the same. And what they looked like were Encyclopedia Britannicas, all about maybe 2 inches thick. And what he was showing me was that all of us at creation were created with a soulmate. And back in 1987, when I had my experience, I had never heard the term soulmate. I had no idea what that was. I didn't even know that there were things called a near-death experience at that time. Well, apparently when God created us, he created all of us with a perfect mate called a soulmate. And we all have books in this huge library. And all of us have the name of our soulmate written on the binding of these books. So he took me to where my soulmate's book was. And the writing said N-I-N-A, Nina. And it didn't go across. It went down. N-I-N-A in gold colored writing. And everybody has their soulmate. And what this book is it talks about all your soulmate's lifetimes, what they learned, what their gifts are, everything about that soulmate is in these books. And we all have one. What I don't know, though, is how often a soulmate comes into a lifetime with us. And that I don't know. I think my first inclination is that they probably don't, but they can if they want to. And I think the reason that a lot of times they don't is that if you had your soulmate with you in a lifetime, you wouldn't learn as much because you'd have your perfect mate. One of the things that we learn the most from is having relationships in our lifetimes. So we learn a lot by having those relationships. So that was the building that had the big dome on it. It was absolutely gorgeous. We plan our lifetimes there. You write them out on these scrolls. You have soulmates. And the next place he took me to, I think was my absolute favorite. And it took me to what looked like, from the outside, looked like a sports stadium. Beautiful, long building. And so he took me to the inside. And the inside were thousands and thousands of chairs, kind of like recliner types of chairs you can lean back in. And what it was I was in the planetarium. Remember when you were a kid, you would take field trips and you'd go to a planetarium and they could show you the stars and things like that on the mm-hmm. ceiling? That's where I was, a planetarium. And my guide took me there. And there was a gentleman behind me. And I never turned around to look at him. I just listened to him. Remember we talked about that on the other side, people seem to have jobs that they love to do?
Yes.
The man behind me, he loved everything about space and the galaxies and universes. And he was an expert in space and astronomy. And he said to me, "Let's begin." All of a sudden, all the lights went off and it was pitch black. And I sat down and he said, "When you look at the stars, this is what you see." And what he was referring to was everybody on Earth with our level of knowledge and technology at that point, this is what you see when you look at the stars. And all of a sudden, he started showing the planets in our solar system, our sun, Earth, then Jupiter, Uranus, Neptune, Venus, all of our planets. And then it disappeared. And then he said, "When we look at the stars, this is what we see." And he was talking about all the people who were on the other side with their level of knowledge and awareness. And all of a sudden, planet after planet started showing up. First, there were dozens, then hundreds, then thousands and millions of other planets. All of them were different colors. Some were red, some were brown, some were yellow. And he said, "There is far more life in the universe than you can possibly imagine." And I think the reason that my guide took me here was for two reasons. The first one was to be able to tell people that life on Earth is, we're not alone in the universe. We're not the only planet. And the second reason, I think, was to tell me that we can have lifetimes on virtually countless other worlds, that Earth is not the only one. So not only is Earth not the only planet, but we can have multiple lifetimes on all kinds of other planets. And I think that was something that, because I grew up watching the original Star Trek with Captain Kirk. I loved that show.
Yeah.
And I'd always believed that there was more out there than just this planet. And that was something that I was so excited by. So I cannot wait to get back to the other side and see all the different planets that we can actually go to. That was just so exciting for me. And that's what they call the planetarium. The next building he took me to looked like, in the United States, we have a building called the Supreme Court building. You may have seen it. They may have something like that in France too, but it was a huge, long, gigantic building again. And the only columns were in the front. They had like 8 or 12 columns in the front. And it had a big triangle, kind of like, you know, the traditional Greek buildings do. So he takes me to the inside and it's a library, but it was so large, I could not see the end of it. It must have been miles long. And my guide said that anything that you want to learn, anything at all, whether it's science or literature or history, anything, you can go to this library and look it up. And there were all these people in this library. Some people were talking, some people were studying, and it was just a huge building full of activity. Well, he took me to an area on the left-hand side of this library, and they looked like what we would call study rooms now in our modern libraries. They were about as big as somebody's average living room. Well, he took me to one of these rooms, and there was a woman sitting there. She had jet black hair, but it went down to her waist. And she was wearing kind of a purplish kind of a gown or a tunic, kind of like you'd think people wore in Greece and in Rome. And she had her back to me, and she was watching a video screen. It looked like what we would call today a flat screen mounted on the wall. And she was watching a video. And my guide said, get closer and see what she's watching. So I get closer, and I can see that she's watching a battle that had taken place between Native American Indians and the United States cavalry. Well, I thought she was watching a movie, and my guide said she's actually watching a battle that took place in Earth's history. And I remember thinking, how is that possible? Because 200 years ago, we didn't have video cameras. I don't even think we had regular cameras. How could she be watching something that actually happened here on Earth? And my guide said, everything gets recorded. Well, I didn't think to ask him, how is that possible? How is everything recorded? The only thing I could think of is it's a God thing. I have no idea how our lifetimes are recorded, but anything that you want to see about history, you can go to this library, you can go into this room, and you can watch it on a movie screen, and you can watch actual living history. And that's why I mentioned when we first started that one of the things I want to do is I want to see what it was like for the Allies in Normandy in 1944. Well, that's something we can do. We can go to these rooms and we can watch history. I just thought that was absolutely fascinating. I can't wait to get back because there's so much I want to see.
Incredible.
Yeah. So that was the library. The next building he took me to was also really extraordinary. He took me to a castle. And I don't know if they have a lot of castles in France, but they have a lot of castles in England.
They do.
Do they?
Lots and
they
lots
do.
And
okay.
lots. Thousands
okay,
and
good.
Thousands.
Oh, fantastic. If I ever get there, I definitely want to take a tour and see some of those. Well, he took me to a castle, and it was absolutely perfect looking, made of stone, just a gorgeous, huge castle. And he told me that the reason he showed me this castle was that on the other side, we still learn. Anything that you want to learn about that was on Earth is also on the other side. So if you're on the other side and you say that, you know, I've never had a lifetime in medieval Europe, I'd like to see what it was like for them, you can go to these castles on the other side and see what these castles looked like. So he takes me to the inside, and the first thing I notice is beautiful red carpet all along the inside of this castle. And on both sides were these huge, long or tall walls, marble walls. And on the walls were life-size paintings of people that had lived in that castle during that time period. So you could go look at King George or Queen Anne, and you could see what they looked like. Not only what they looked like, but you could also see what they wore during that time period. And in front of each one of these paintings was a podium. And on the podium was a book. Well, the book was about that person's lifetime. So if you wanted to, on the other side, if you were on the other side and you wanted to learn about a particular person, you could go to the castle, you could look at their picture, and you could read about their lives. Right about then, I looked off to my right, and there was a, you know, those round staircases that a lot of castles have?
Yes. Spiral.
Spirals. Yeah, exactly. There was a woman who was coming down the staircase. Her hair was about as long as yours, but it was strawberry blonde. And she was wearing kind of a peach color tunic or a gown. Well, she walked up to me and she talked to me. And she said, is there anything I can help you find? Louisa, I was so ignorant. I didn't know where I was or what was happening. You know what I said to her? I said, no, thanks. I'm just looking. Kind of like what you see when you walk into a clothing store.
Yeah.
And I still kick myself to this day. Why I could have asked her anything. I could have said, who are you? Where am I? I thought I was supposed to be having surgery. What's going on? Well, my guide said that on the other side, what she loves to do is she loves to learn, or she's kind of a professor about medieval history on Earth. And her job was simply to answer questions that people have about that time period in Earth's history. She loved history about that particular time. So anything that you wanted to learn about that era, you could go to a castle, you could see what they looked like, you could read about their books, what they did in that lifetime, or you can simply talk to someone like this woman and learn about their whole experience in Earth. I thought that was just amazing. I can't wait to get back and talk to people like that. Well, here's the last part of my near-death experience. My guide took me to what I can only describe as an absolutely beautiful meadow. There were rolling hills, beautiful flowers, green grass. It was a perfect day. And then my guide left. And I thought I was standing there by myself. Then all of a sudden, a man showed up in front of me. And I don't know how I know this, but it was Jesus. He didn't have to say what his name was. I knew that this soul was the person that we called Jesus in that lifetime. I could see what he was wearing. He had a white robe on with a golden sash around his waist, and he had gold-colored sandals that laced up his calves. And he spoke to me, and he said, "You must tell them there is no death." And then just like that, I was back in my body in the operating room. And that was the totality of my near-death experience.
Wow.
That's how it ended.
Wow. That was so detailed and so incredible and so comforting.
Really. Isn't it though? I'd love to share.
As you said, there's such a great fear of death and the unknown, but it's very, very comforting. Can I ask you a few questions?
Oh, absolutely.
I just want to say, I love how you say you remember it was like yesterday. It was so not like a dream, or it doesn't fade away.
Exactly.
My first question, your spirit guide, Alan.
Yeah.
What did Alan look like?
You know what? I never actually looked at him. The whole time he was talking to me in my left ear. And I don't know why I didn't just turn around and look at him. I never thought to do that. I was just going along with this whole experience and just observing, taking in everything he was showing me. But I felt absolutely at peace with him. I felt like I had known this person my whole life. But I don't know why I never looked at him. I never turned around to look at him. I didn't see what he looked like.
Interesting. And have you communicated with Alan since you've returned to your physical
body? No. The only thing that I've ever had happen that you would call maybe of a paranormal experience was when my wife's dad died 8 years ago. And I had a dream about him. And in the dream, he came to me about 8 days after he died. And he said to me, "Everything is going to be all right. We're all going to be together again. Give it everything you've got." And he was just basically telling me that when you're in life, give it everything you've got, because what you learn is what you take with you when you cross over. But I've never had any other experience other than that. I don't have any ability to talk to the other side or hear people or see anybody. I think the only gift I really had was that the ability of recall, so that I could share with people what I actually saw. Because I think the biggest fear of humanity is the fear of dying.
Yes.
Nobody knows what happens. Well, I think with my experience, I'm just a piece of a jigsaw puzzle. And I think my piece is that now we know what happens when people cross into the light at the end of the tunnel. So all these different people's near-death experiences, where all of us are just jigsaw puzzles, and we're all trying to build the puzzle. And I think that was just my unique part of that, was knowing what happens on the other side of the light now.
Yes. And I guess if, you know, the greatest fear is death and the opposite is love, then I guess perhaps you're a bringer of love.
Yeah, maybe. It's funny because I always ask myself, why did they give me that experience? Because I'm not like you. I don't have a podcast. I don't have a YouTube channel. I don't even have a website. They must have known that. But when Jesus talked to me, he didn't say, you know what, John, when you have time, when it's convenient, could you share with people what you learned here? It wasn't like that. He said, you must tell them there is no death. So all I've ever done is try to share my story with is anybody who would listen. Because I think it's such a hopeful one. And I love to retell it because it brings back all those feelings again. And yes. I can't wait until it's my time to go, because there's so much I want to experience. But I'm here.
You're here. And what you're sharing is very much needed in the world. Oh my gosh, I've got more questions. One quick question.
Sure.
Were you consciously walking, or were you floating during this near-death experience?
You know what? I don't know. And people have asked me that. Because we didn't walk anywhere. We didn't fly. We just ended up there. It was almost like it was thought. Mm. I think if we had walked, it would have taken too long for him to show me all these different places. Because in that building with the big dome on it, and that had that walkway out front, all those people were walking around to go to different places. But I think on the other side, there is some other way that we can go places besides walking. And the only conclusion I can come up with that is that it has to do with thought.
We're thinking in our physical terms. So we're not really physical on the other side. We don't have a physical body.
Yeah, we do. And they look just like we do. Some people are taller. Some people are shorter. Some people are brunette. Some people are blonde. And you can wear anything you want. A lot of people wear tunics or gowns, but I also saw people who were wearing just t-shirts and jeans. Mm. It's totally up to the individual what they want to wear.
I love that. And I have so many people say, I'm never coming back to this world, and it's so hard, and the suffering and the conflict and the contrast that all of us at some point will experience. Yeah. And you spoke about, I loved your analogy with the bike. You can read how to ride a bike, but until you actually ride one, you really don't understand the whole sensory experience.
Exactly. Yep, exactly.
And I love that you said we do have a choice.
Yes. Nobody forces us to come into a lifetime. It's strictly up to the individual. And some people have more lives, some people have fewer. It's totally up to them what they want to learn.
Thank you. And with our, with our soul plan, or what we're planning for this lifetime, I guess it's not the little things, but the major events that occur in our life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
How does that come into free will? Can we change? Did you have the impression that we could change our life path in our human incarnation? Or is it really pre-planned for the most part?
I think the major events of your life, like what country you're going to be born into, what language you're going to learn, who your parents are going to be, are you going to have kids, what's your career going to be? I think a lot of those things are things that are fixed for us, because that's what we plan for. But there's also a lot of variability. God gave all of us free will. It's totally up to us. We can plan what we want to accomplish. But I think that there are things that happen in life that we don't necessarily plan for.
I love the talk of soulmates.
Isn't it neat?
I love it. Have you found Nina?
I don't think so. I don't know. It's possible that maybe my wife is Nina. I don't know. That's something that people have asked me, and I just don't know. I wish that I knew that, but I don't. Mm-hmm. I just remember everybody has a soulmate. And on the books, their names are written down, and you can see what your soulmate is, or who your soulmate is. I just don't know if they come into a lifetime very often with us. I don't know.
That's interesting, and it's so romantic. I love that.
But the most important thing about that is I want people to know that if you don't find someone in your life on earth that you can have that relationship with, it doesn't matter because you're not necessarily here for that. Everybody has different reasons for coming here, and you will always have that perfect mate on the other side. And the other side, and this is what's hard to explain, the other side is home. That's our eternity. When we're here on earth, this is just temporary. We're only here for a little while. So if you don't find your perfect mate, it's okay because everybody has one. And you shouldn't, and people shouldn't feel bad about themselves if they don't find what they think is their soulmate, because we're not always here for that. Does that make sense?
It absolutely. You keep saying you can't wait to get back to home, I guess, really. It is our home.
Yeah. Yep.
That's even home. Though you're still here for a reason,
for
the moment. Did you see, so you saw the solar systems and star systems and the galaxies. Yep. Did you see what the life forms looked like?
No, I was too far away. It was like they were showing me all these different planets from being in orbit. And all I could see were just the colors of these different worlds. Was it a planet like a desert? Was there a lot of oceans? Were there jungles? I could see that from orbit, but I was too far away to see what the civilizations and the beings looked like. And what I do know is they don't always look like us as humans. It depends on how those planets evolved. It was like God set all of these worlds up, but gave them the ability to evolve on their own. And so there are all kinds of different life forms all over the universe, not just us.
No, there has to be more out there. I guess you'll find out next time.
Yep.
A couple more questions. When you were watching the video of the woman watching the history of the Native American Indian, the battle.
Yeah.
And you said you can watch anything from the past, or apparently everything's recorded. Did you have any indication that the future was already recorded?
I didn't understand that. I didn't get a feeling for that. The feeling that I got was, this is where you go in these rooms to look at the past. I don't know if the future is already pre-planned. I've heard that theory before. I just don't know. Everything that I saw was about planning to go see things in the past or planning a future lifetime in that big building with the dome. But most of what I saw was the emphasis that you can go back and learn that God created all of us with kind of like this hardwired to want to learn and to grow and to experience and to evolve. But I didn't get the sense that everything is already planned ahead of time. I think a lot of that is still completely up to us and what we want to experience with future lifetimes.
And when you saw your past lifetimes, obviously they didn't look physically like you. You just knew that they were an incarnation of you.
Exactly. They didn't look like I look in this life because our genetics are always different.
Yes.
But I knew by looking at those screens that it was me. And we all will have that. We'll all know that it's us.
It's so fascinating. And what did Jesus feel like?
It was a feeling of absolute love and no judgment. The feeling that I got from him, you know, when you're a kid and you're told about religion and you're going to be judged and you've got to live your life a certain way and there's only one way to believe or there's only one religion. What I got the feeling from him was that any religion that you follow that brings you closer to God is the right one for you. I didn't get the feeling from him at all that there was only one religion, that there was only one path. Rather, that there are many paths, and God doesn't care which one you take, as long as you're on the path. That's what seemed to matter the most. It was extraordinary. It was the neatest feeling. Yeah, it was just the neatest feeling to be in front of someone that you had there was no judgment in him whatsoever. It was like he understood everything that we go through here in life. and that nobody really judges us. You just do your best.
You experienced unconditional love.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Where's the best place for people to connect with you if they want to reach
out? Sure. They can email me anytime. It's John J. Davis 65@icloud.com. And if any of your listeners want to reach out to me, I am happy to talk with anybody anytime.
Thank you. I will also leave a link below in the show notes in case someone didn't get that. They can just click on it.
Absolutely.
On a final note, John, you're amazing. Wow, wow, wow. I mean, so detailed, and my mind's just spinning with all the questions. Your phone's running out of battery.
I know.
Is there anything on a final note you'd like to share with the Passion Harvest audience that I haven't asked you?
Absolutely. I think that there are really two reasons why we're here and what's important. And the first one is that we come here to learn, to grow, and to experience. And the second reason that we're here is something that I always think of what the Dalai Lama said. The Dalai Lama said, our prime purpose in this life is to help others. And if you can't help them, at least don't hurt them. So we're here to learn, and at the same time, we're here to help our fellow human being try to be kind, compassionate, loving, because we're all on a path. And like you said a moment ago, many of our paths are filled with difficulty and challenges. We wouldn't be here if we wanted to have a perfect life. We would have stayed on the other side. So everybody needs help at some point, and try to live your life in such a way that you can help others. That's what I think is the most important.
Really beautiful and so profound, simple and true. John Davis, you wonderful, wonderful. You're amazing. And thank you so much for sharing your incredible near-death experience. And thank you for being on Passion Harvest.
Well, thank you for having me, Louisa. I had a great time. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. Bye-bye.